Good afternoon. I'm Deanna Helscher. I'm a director of the Michael and Susan Dell Center for Healthy Living at the University of Texas School of Public Health in Austin. And I'm really happy to see everyone here. Every time I've presented on this project, I've been the last session of a meeting. So it's kind of fun to be not the last session of the meeting this time. This was a multi-PI project. I'd like to recognize my other PI is Marsha Ori, who is actually from Texas A&M. So this is a University of Texas, Texas A&M joint project. One of my co-authors is in the audience, Heather Atterbury, and then several other people who have helped with the project, Brooks Ballard, Michelle Hashimi, and Christina Lee are all here as well. I have no relationships to disclose. So I went and corrected this, but they didn't upload the new one in the speaker thing. So anyway, there is a clean copy of this. So a little bit about the background. Safe routes to school programs have been shown to increase children's physical activity levels, but state legislative support has been mixed, and especially in Texas. And so what I'd like to do today is talk about how we've gone on this process about translating our research into action. And so what I'm going to do is talk about results we've had from two studies. One is the Texas Childhood Obesity Prevention Policy Evaluation, or the TCOPE study, and the second one is the 2013 Texas Health Perception Survey. So with Texas Safe Routes to School policy, we were specifically looking at what had happened in 2007. And in Texas, two types of grants were awarded at that time. And so infrastructure grants are the brick and mortar type projects. So that's building sidewalks, crosswalks, traffic calming devices. And in that year, 56 of those grants were given out. And so they usually started around 100,000 and usually went up. There were also non-infrastructure grants, which included a Safe Routes to School plan, and those may or may not include infrastructure changes. So you had to have a plan before you could do infrastructure changes. And they were doing another round of grants in 2009, so a lot of the non-infrastructure grants were either they were going to do a program or they were preparing to do the infrastructure changes at a later time. And there were 194 of those grants given out, and they were $10,000 a piece. So they were much lower amounts of money than the infrastructure grants. So for our TCOPE study, we actually had two parts of it. And so this part of it was looking at the effect of different funding allocations on active commuting to schools. And right now, I'm just going to talk about the baseline data. And then the second part of our project was to communicate our findings with decision makers. And so we'd used a natural experiment in this case. So we compared three groups. So one were the infrastructure schools. So we selected a random selection of schools that were doing infrastructure projects, a random selection of those that were awarded non-infrastructure projects, and then we had matched comparison schools. So it was a nice design, and then we followed them for 3 years. So I really appreciate your comment about 3 years we found out was not quite enough. They still hadn't completed all the infrastructure changes. And then we collected baseline data in 2009. And so we did active commuting to school counts within the schools, and we did student surveys and parent surveys using a variety of validated instruments. We ended up using mixed linear regression and control for random and fixed effects and other independent variables. So I just wanted to point out now the demographic variables by our school type. We were very similar across our demographic variables. There were really no significant differences here. We tended to have, our schools were mainly non-white in the percentage of kids attending. Most of this was Hispanic. In economically disadvantaged, we had a majority of low income in the schools, low resource schools. We also had a significant percentage of family members who at least one of them had been born outside of the United States. And then if you notice the mean time to walk to school, the majority were 20 minutes or less. So these schools tended to be not the rural schools that you'll see in Texas where there's a lot of busing. So this is our baseline rates of active commuting to school. So just to show where we were, it's very low. It's consistent with some of the U.S. data, though. But we had significantly higher rates of active commuting to school in the morning for infrastructure schools and planning schools compared to our comparison schools. And it was also very low compared to active commuting in 1969. So we still have a ways to go. So one of the things we did was we looked at our student survey and looked at parental factors associated with walking to school. And we found that parents were more likely to let their children commute to school if they had higher self-efficacy in letting their child walk to school. They perceived better walkability around their house and at their child's school. They were more likely to let their child walk to other places from school. Then they reported better outcomes with walking to school. So they said the child would be healthier if they walked to school. And then finally, they reported fewer barriers to commuting. Interestingly enough, we also did some audits, and so these were not necessarily substantiated by the audit, so it was about the perceptions. We also did a study looking at more parent-perceived environmental factors, and we found that the students were more likely to walk to school with higher sidewalks availability, if the sidewalks were better maintained, and if they had safer road crossings. They also were more likely to walk if they had no problems with traffic speed or the amount of traffic or accidents, or if there were no problem with crossing guards. They had adequate crossing guards. And then they said walking to school was lower if there was parent concern with stray or dangerous animals. And this happens actually quite a bit in Texas, especially along the border. And then availability of others with whom to walk. So if the kids walked together, if they didn't have anybody to walk together with. So taking these data, we came up with several policy implications. And one is that many of the parent-related variables were consistent with active commuting to school. So that tells us we really want to look at the parents. We found that they were highly motivated. This was one of our few projects where we had them contact us and tell us without asking for it. They would tend to call me and ask about, are you making our school safer? So they were really interested in this. And we also needed programs that focus on parent education and making the neighborhood safer. So in doing that, we wanted to appeal to the legislators, and so we wanted to find out what they thought. So since 2001, we've been very progressive in implementation of policies for school physical activity and coordinated school health. However, Texans are not engaged at all, and so this might explain a little bit of Texas politics. We're 51st in voter turnout in 2010 and 49th in civic engagement, so it's really an issue. And then in 2011, we had a new legislature and a lot of new legislators, and so a lot of what we had been working to, we had to protect all of a sudden. So it was really kind of a problem for us. So in 2013, we conducted a survey to assess the knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions about obesity prevention and control measures of legislators from that 83rd Texas legislature. So the legislature only meets every other year. So what we did was we developed a contact list of legislators, and we administered a survey. So we had a online hard copy or interview survey. So however we could get the information, we collected it. It was from a legislator or their aide, and their aide was asked to complete it as the legislator would. And we targeted all the legislators. And then we did some interviews, and the interviews were in person with the aide speaking on behalf of the legislator. And we targeted their legislators with committee appointments that were related to transportation or public health, and then the farm-to-table caucus. And so we looked at frequencies and means and thematic analyses. And so these are kind of small here, but what I wanted to show you is if you look at it, the maroonish, purplish, the darkest is strongly opposed, this is strongly opposed, this is somewhat opposed, this is neutral, this is somewhat support and strongly support. So when you look at these, a lot of these at the top, this is coordinated school health programs that increase physical activity and nutrition education. There's a lot of support for that. The one here is improved nutrition and physical activity in early childhood programs. Again, a lot of support for that. The one we were most interested in related to safe routes to school was this one right here. And so this was support community environments to promote physical activity. So in general, there was a wide range of support for that, a little bit of opposition. When we were looking at these were all the legislators we surveyed, so we had about 46% of the legislators we captured with this. So it really was a good response in terms of this. But we thought that this was good news, that most of them did support this. We asked them a lot about environmental standards or practices, and that's where we saw a little bit more pushback. The ones at the bottom here were limiting television ads for unhealthy foods and drinks, so they didn't want to limit things. This one here was prohibit the sale of sodas, chips, and candy in school vending machines. Related to safe routes to school, this one was promote more physical activity in schools, and there was a lot of support for that. The other one was ensure new schools and subdivisions are walking and biking friendly. And even though these were neutral, there's a little bit less support for that than some of the others. There still was a wide array of support. So one of the other questions we asked them is how much of a role should each play in fighting the obesity problem in Texas? And these were the top four, and these were the bottom four. So if you look at these, they said parents and families, individuals, and healthcare providers were the ones that had the biggest role. So the maroon, purple is more role, the green is no role, major role, sorry, and the green is no role. And so if you look at the bottom, these were the very last two where restaurants had a large no role. And if you looked at transportation groups, most of the legislature thought that they are, about 25% thought that they had no role in childhood obesity. So they couldn't see the connection between transportation policies and outcomes. So we asked them what would make this more appealing to legislators, research. And this was qualitative data collected from 16 interviews. And so what they wanted was Texas-specific data. So they wanted not from other places, not national data, not from other places in the U.S. They wanted information that was easily digestible, so pictures, infographics, and then information that they need to know with links for more information. And then finally, they wanted it to come from an expert, so a physician or professor is who they cited as an expert most frequently. So one of the things we did was develop tools to disseminate the research findings, and I'm going to show you a couple of those today. So we used information from a Robert Wood Johnson communications training, and we based it on the results that I just have showed you, and then we worked with our advocacy partners as well as a health communication student graphic artist to develop the infographic, and we developed a one-pager and a PowerPoint slide, and then we shared this with our partners in a PDF format. So it's in the handouts, and there were copies of this in the back, and it's also as a handout on the website. So we have a series of slides that anybody can download and use. So it's Our Kids Want to Walk the Walk. And so what we did was we showed them a hypothetical community, and we talked about the problem. So we drew this from our data. So safe sidewalks was a problem. You'll see number one there. The next one is enforced traffic speed. The third one is clean and crime-free neighborhoods. The fourth one is bike lanes. There's no bike lanes here. The fifth was crosswalks. There's no crosswalk here. One is there's no children or families walking to school. There's stray animals here. And then finally, the school policies to encourage walking and biking. So we just showed the school to represent that. So the next slide then is we talk about the solution. And as you see, it kind of changed. And so the whole thing lightens up. And so here you have sidewalks to and from school. You have, didn't finish it all the way. You have the sidewalks that go to and from the school. You have enforcement of the traffic speed here. You have clean and crime-free neighborhoods. You see the bike lanes. Here's a walking school bus. There's bike racks. So as you can see here, no stray animals. Just a very much more appealing community. Then we ended with several recommendations, and these are actually similar to what we saw in the first presentation. So a lot of those strategies are presented here for the legislators. And then we listed sources there as well. So in conclusion, what we were able to do is work together with a multidisciplinary team. So we brought together researchers, advocacy groups, health communication experts to develop these tools. And what they did was they met what the legislators said that they wanted: Texas data, an easy-to-use format, and references. So what we've been using these, but next steps would be further testing of these materials to see how effective they were. We know that they were used, that they were popular, but we didn't do any usability tests with legislators. So that's kind of one of our next steps. And then just applying this model to other work. We did a similar one with our WIC findings. We were looking at the changes in the WIC packages. So we have a copy of that in the back too. And I'd like to just acknowledge that this work was partially supported by 3 Robert Wood Johnson Foundation grants. And here's a picture of our research team. So any questions? Yes. We did not have cost associated with it when we asked about it. When we did the qualitative interviews, they did bring up cost. They were very hesitant to approve any policies that had a cost associated with it. So if it had a cost, but they were already doing it, they were fine to change stream, you know. But if it was something, they didn't like to incur new costs. And part of what they said is they didn't want to approve a cost that would be ongoing, that would kind of outlive them in terms of their term in office. Yeah. Any other questions?
We'll just open it up to general questions then, if anyone's got.
Right.
We've got plenty of time. So if there's any questions for any of us, feel free.
One thing I wanted to just let y'all know real quick is we have 2 related presentations on Wednesday in session 5089 that are related to some of the legislative findings as well. So.
Okay.